connecting to Conference AMSAT-WZ5Y.
Welcome to the W. W5BSA repeater.
Good evening, folks. QST, this is Marty, WV5Y. It's once again time for another edition of the Houston AmSat Net. This net meets on Tuesday, so discuss topics related to satellites, balloons, and other amateur-related items. This is net number 1594, and it's 8 p.m. Central Time on Tuesday, January 14th, 2025. Which in UTC time is Wednesday, January the 15th, 2025 at 0200. Just looking at our audio levels here, looks like we got them kind of cranked up a little bit, but I guess better high than low, so we'll see how this goes. See, this is a directed net, and all calls should go through net control, and this net is dedicated to Andy McAllister, W5ACM. And thanks to Joe, W5BSA, we're on the 145.19 repeater in West Houston. The PL tone is 123.0. And I will now take local check-ins. Well, we might have a little bit of DX going on this evening. I heard a little of a blip there. That sounded like it could have been a repeater. Is somebody checking in? We'll try it one more time here. Okay, could be Randy, 85G, but... let's see, you're just not making it in, barely bringing the repeater up, so, well, we'll try again at half past the hour. So, let's see, we do have a little bit of South Texas Balloon Launch Team information. We have an update on BLT-139, and that's John's Balloon, AB5SS-139. And Walter's giving us this update here. He says, major congrats on BLT-139 for its first revolution around the world this morning, and hoping for many more trips. This is still holding high at over 48,000 feet. That was on Saturday, and it did pass to the south of us, crossing the Gulf of Mexico, or the Gulf of wherever. So, yeah, it looks like it pinged south of New Orleans, pretty much. A little bit east of there. But, so we'll just stay tuned and see what we get out of it. So hopefully it'll keep going there for a while. Okay, we're switching over to ANS bulletins. This is ANS bulletin number 12. And our editor this week is Mitch Ehrenstorf, 80HJ. So we appreciate that there for Mitch. Okay, allergies are acting up. Nothing like a time for a few sneezes there. The AMSAT News Service bulletins are a free weekly news and information service of AMSAT, the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation. ANS publishes news related to amateur radio in space, including reports and activities of a worldwide group of amateur radio operators who share an active interest in designing, building, launching, and communicating to analog and digital amateur radio satellites. And the news feed on www.amsat.org publishes news of amateur radio in space as soon as our volunteers can post it. So please send any amateur satellite news or reports to ans-editor@amsat.org. And you can sign up for a free email delivery of the AMSAT News Service bulletins via the ANS list. To join the list, you just go to mailman.amsat.org/pastorius/lists/ans.amsat.org. All right, India's getting active. They've launched SpaDex satellites with amateur radio experiment. India has launched the SpaDex mission, designed to perform the country's first autonomous docking experiment in space. A Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle, or PSLV C-60, carried two SpaDex satellites into orbit from the Satish Dhawan Space Center in Srikakulam, India, on December the 30th, 2024, at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or 16:30 UTC. The Indian Space Research Organization, or the ISRO, sees the mission as a step towards supporting future moon missions and building a space station. The Space Docking Experiment, or SpaDex, consists of two 220-kilogram, or 485-pound, satellites. The Target and the Chaser, which will test rendezvous and docking procedures. ISRO Chairman S. Somanath confirmed the satellites were placed in the correct orbit after launch. First docking attempt is expected to occur in the next several days. The mission will assess the transfer of power between the docked spacecraft and evaluate dual spacecraft control capabilities. In addition to the docking experiment, the mission includes the POEM-4 or PS-4 Orbital Experimental Module, which carries 24 payloads. These include a robotic arm demonstration and a debris capture manipulator. The robotic arm will test mobility for tasks in orbit, while the debris capture manipulator will attempt to retrieve tethered objects in an effort to address space debris. One of the payloads aboard POEM 4 is the BGS RPIT, an amateur radio project developed by the SJC Institute of Technology, the Upagraph Amateur Radio Club, VU2URC, and AMSAT India to support educational activities and celebrate India's 75th year of independence. Payload can transmit images via slow scan television or SSTV, audio images or audio messages, and telemetry data on 145.870 MHz, and it also functions as an APRS digipeater on 145.825 MHz. Approved for IARU frequency coordination on December 22, 2024, BGS RPIT completed its first SSTV transmission period on January the 10th with more trial periods sure to come soon. The autonomous docking technology tested in SPADEX is crucial for ISRO's planned Chandrayaan-4 lunar mission, which aims to return samples from the moon's south pole. Docking capabilities will enable the transfer of samples to a return capsule in lunar orbit. This technology is also essential for the assembly and operation of the Bharatiya Antariksh Station, India's planned space station. I'm going to have to learn how to say that one. Okay, the SPADEX mission includes payloads developed by ISRO and collaborators from universities and startups. The experiments focus on areas like satellite servicing, satellite debris management, and educational outreach. The mission serves as a platform to advance technologies needed for India's space exploration goals. And we want to thank Tariq Malik, Space.com, and AMSAT India for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y with the Houston AMSAT Net. You can call and check into this net by calling 713-467-9870 for a quick phone check-in. You can also send an APRS message, and that's to WV5Y, or West Virginia 5 Yankee, with no dashes and no numbers, as Andy used to like to say. Or there's that email, it's WV5Y@comcast.net. Okay, the Parker Solar Probe achieved its closest ever approach to the Sun. NASA's Parker Solar Probe reached a significant milestone on December the 24th, 2024, by coming within 3.8 million miles of the Sun's surface, the closest a human-made object has ever traveled toward a star.
DL-123.
The spacecraft confirmed its survival through a signal received at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory, or the APL, on December the 26th. This marks another step forward in the mission's effort to study the Sun and its influence on the solar system. The probe, traveling at 430,000 miles per hour, or 692,000 kilometers per hour, continues to push the limits of solar exploration. The mission allows the spacecraft to gather data by regions of the Sun that were previously out of reach. Nikki Fox, Associate Administrator for NASA's Science Mission Directorate, said, "By studying the Sun up close, we can better understand its impacts throughout our solar system, including on the technology we use daily on Earth, as well as learn about the workings of stars across the universe." This close approach opens the door for new measurements that could refine knowledge about solar wind, coronal heating, and other fundamental processes. Launched in 2018, the Parker Solar Probe used 7 Venus flybys to adjust its orbit and approach the Sun. Its current orbit brings it near the Sun every 3 months. A carbon foam heat shield designed to withstand temperatures up to 2,600 degrees Fahrenheit, or 1,430 degrees centigrade, protects the spacecraft's instruments, which remain at a stable temperature. During its latest encounter, the shield endured temperatures of 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit, or 980 degrees Celsius, demonstrating the durability of its design and construction. The spacecraft has already provided valuable data about solar phenomena. It has observed magnetic field structures called switchbacks, which help explain plasma heating and acceleration. Adam Szabo, mission scientist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, noted, "This close approach will give us more data to understand how the solar wind is accelerated closer in. Measurements from within the solar corona offer new perspectives on how energy and particles move throughout this region." The Parker Solar Probe also has contributed to studies of Venus, detecting thermal emissions from its surface and capturing images of its orbital dust ring. These observations highlight the spacecraft's ability to gather insights beyond its primary mission. Data from the recent solar pass will soon be transmitted to Earth, providing additional information for researchers. Future solar passes are scheduled for March 22nd and June 19th, 2025. Ralph Simmel, John Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory Director, emphasized the team's efforts, stating, "Their incredible technological breakthroughs enabled this amazing mission, and they have delivered critical new insights that are revolutionizing our understanding of heliophysics and space weather." As part of NASA's Living with a Star program, the Parker Solar Probe continues to investigate the relationship between the Sun and the Earth, providing valuable knowledge for science and society. Okay, we want to thank Michael Buckley and Mary Johnson Groh from John Hopkins University for that information. All right, what do you know? The 2025 AMSAT President's Club coins have just arrived. They are celebrating the 40th anniversary of amateur radio on human spaceflight. You can help support golf and Fox Plus program. You can join the AMSAT President's Club today, and that's by going over to www.amsat.org/join-v-amsat-presidents-club. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, in the Houston AMSAT Net. We're just a little past, quarter past the hour, so we're going to take a quick look around and see who we've got checking in via some of our other means here. Talk to Charlie. That's the K5ENG. He's over there in West Houston. And we did talk to him. It's been a couple weeks now. So I need to see how he's doing over there. Let's see. We've got Dale, WD0AKO. He's up there in the cold country in Moorhead, Minnesota. Up there about as far north as Fargo, North Dakota. He does the backup archiving of the audio for the website. And we appreciate him doing that for us. And, of course, that's on automatic, so when he's out taking a cruise with the wife, it happens, and we appreciate it. We have had to use it in the past. All right, we've also got Vern, WA0RCR. He's out there in Wentzville, Missouri, and he transmits our net on 1.860 megahertz, full carrier AM, and that's at 5:30 p.m. and 9 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays. So, say thanks to Vern out there in Wentzville, Missouri. Okay, we got Kai up there in 6ZZO in the far northern part of California on the coast, and in McKinleyville, California. And he's our podcast listener, one of them, and he calls and checks in, so well, we appreciate that. And let's see, from APRS, we've got, let's see here. Okay, that's easy. We got no messages on APRS. From IRC, let's see, we've got Ken, AK0A, Clay, KG4OZW, Brian, KG4WIJ, Renee, NZ9T, and Bob, K8WX. And let's see here, from Echolink, we've got Mitch, AD0HJ, and of course, thanks to Mitch, you can participate in the Wednesday night AmSatNet, and that happens over on DMR on the Digital Talk Group of 98006 or YSF Fusion 11689. And so we appreciate Mitch putting on the Wednesday night AmSatNet, and that happens at 9 p.m. Central Time. So be sure and get on DMR and check in there with Mitch tomorrow night. And let's see, we've got Damien, AG9P. He's over there in Oconto, Wisconsin. Good evening to him. And hello to NBTC. He's over there in Long Beach, California. And we've also got Andrew, KC5LWY. And he's down there in Galveston, Texas. And we appreciate him working there on that ferry. And making sure we all get across to Bolivar and back again, especially when they got those big weekends going on and lots of traffic, and it can get crazy down there, I can tell you. Okay, this is Maurice, EV5Y, with the Houston AmSatNet. And let's see, we've got a 3D printed helicone antenna, and that is for L-band weather satellites.
CL-123.
Gabe Emerson, KL-1FL. The creator behind the YouTube channel Save It for Parts has unveiled a new video highlighting a 3D printable helical antenna for receiving weather data from polar orbiting L-band satellites such as NOAA and Meteor. Designed by a user named Tomito, the 1.7 gigahertz HRPT helicone antenna design is freely available on Thingiverse. Its compact size, straightforward assembly, and effective performance have the potential to make it a hit among amateur radio and satellite enthusiasts. The manual instructions and 3D printed files can be accessed at www.thingiverse.com/thing:643-6342. And, of course, thanks to Bruce, KK5DO, who does our website, this link is available over at a document accessible from the front page of AmSatNet.com. Well, appreciate Bruce putting that over there for us. Makes it a lot easier if you want to go check out any of these documents in more detail. The video begins with the challenges encountered during the printing process. Early attempts at creating the antenna's helical scaffold were plagued by warping issues in the support legs, resulting in several failed prints. To address this, the original 3D model was modified to include additional center supports, ensuring a stable print. Once the printing phase was complete, the assembly process involved wrapping wire around a 2-inch pipe, crafting a reflector for metal window screen, and piecing everything together. All right, and it turns out it is looking like a nice little dish. Testing the completed antenna proved its effectiveness. Using an RTFR receiver and the SatDump software, Gabe successfully received data from the NOAA-18 HRPT satellite. By manually tracking the satellite, clear and detailed weather images, including nighttime, thermal, and infrared captures were obtained, showcasing the antenna's capability for high-quality reception. All right, and those are not low-Earth orbit satellites, so you don't have to change the position too much of the antenna, but you do need that gain to be able to pull that signal in. Designed with simplicity in mind, the Helicone antenna features a right-handed circular polarization configuration. Instead of relying on screws, the assembly process used hot glue, and materials such as copper wire and sheet metal were sourced from everyday household items. These choices highlight an accessibility and affordability for hobbyists of all experience levels. Performance comparison with an existing motorized tracking antenna revealed that the Helicone delivered comparative signal strength and image quality. While hand tracking limited its functionality, its portability and ease of use were standout features. Lightweight design and straightforward assembly make it an ideal choice for amateur satellite enthusiasts looking for a practical and cost-effective solution.
This is the W5BSA repeater.
Okay, Gabe concludes with praise for the antenna's design and a call to action for viewers to try building one themselves. Future enhancements such as integrating the Helicone with a motorized tracking system are already being considered. For now, this detailed guide offers an excellent starting point for satellite hobbyists eager to explore affordable and efficient ways to receive weather data from orbiting satellites. The video titled, "This 3D Printed Satellite Antenna is Fantastic," can be found on the Save It for Parts YouTube channel. And, of course, Bruce has the link on the website. You can do a search on YouTube for Save It for Parts, or you can go straight there by going to https://youtu.be/PPKUXSO. And we want to thank Gabe Emerson, KO1FL, and RTL-SDR.com for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, in the Houston AmSatNet. All right, we're just a minute or two away here from half past the hour. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick standby and see if we have any local check-ins. So any local check-ins on the 19 repeater in West Houston, come now. All right. Good evening, Herbert. We definitely got KD5PQJ heard and copied and pulled in that time. So, good evening. Hope you're having a good night out there. He's in West Houston. Let's see, do we have anybody else? Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AmSatNet. We have a Cold War mystery. Why did Jimmy Carter save the space shuttle? The space shuttle program, an enduring symbol of American ingenuity, came perilously close to cancellation in the late 1970s. With the recent passing of Jimmy Carter at age 100, a fascinating story has resurfaced. How the 39th president, despite his well-known skepticism toward manned spaceflight, played a critical role in rescuing the program. This surprising twist in Cold War history highlights Carter's pragmatism and the complex interplay between space exploration and geopolitics during his presidency. This story first emerged during an interview with Chris Kraft, the former NASA Johnson Space Center director and a key architect of the Apollo program. Kraft recounted a critical 1978 meeting at NASA's Houston headquarters where dire financial constraints threatened the shuttle's future. By then, the program was years behind schedule and hundreds of millions over budget. Faced with insufficient funding, NASA leaders considered two bleak options: securing a massive funding boost or relegating the shuttle to a mere research vehicle incapable of fulfilling its ambitious mission to deliver payloads into orbit.
DL-123.
NASA Administrator Robert Frost took the crisis to Washington, presenting President Carter with a stark ultimatum. Carter, known for his ambivalence toward manned spaceflight, surprised everyone by asking, "How much do you need?" According to Kraft, Carter's decision was influenced by recent discussions with Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev during Strategic Arms Limitation Talks, or the SALT. Carter reportedly highlighted the shuttle's capability to verify Soviet compliance with arms agreements, a claim that underscored its national security value. While some details of this account remain disputed, Carter's administration approved supplemental funding in 1979 and 1980, effectively saving the shuttle program. Carter's support for the shuttle is striking given his poor skepticism about its purpose. Early in his presidency, Carter dismissed the shuttle as a contrivance to keep NASA alive. His vice president, Walter Mondale, had also labeled the program a senseless extravaganza. Yet, by the late 1970s, escalating Cold War tensions reframed the shuttle's significance. A key memo from the National Security Council emphasized the shuttle's strategic value, arguing that canceling the program would undermine national pride and technological leadership. While some NASA officials, including Shuttle Program Manager Robert Thompson, downplayed the risk of cancellation, the financial reality was grim. Development of critical components, such as the shuttle's main engines and thermal protection tiles, was years behind schedule. Without Carter's intervention, the shuttle might never have achieved its iconic role, flying 135 missions over 3 decades and setting the groundwork for the International Space Station. In later reflections, Carter acknowledged his lack of enthusiasm for human space exploration, but defended his decision to fund the shuttle. "I didn't want to waste the money already invested," he explained, noting that he discussed the shuttle's peaceful intentions with Brezhnev during SALT II negotiations. While Carter's motivations may have been rooted in pragmatism and diplomacy, his actions ensured the shuttle's place in history. Despite his mixed legacy on space policy, Carter's pivotal role in salvaging the shuttle underscores his capacity to recognize the broader implications of technological leadership during a turbulent era. And we want to thank Eric Berger, ARS Technica, for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, in the Houston Amtrak Net. Hey, do you need new satellite antennas? You can purchase an N2 LEO pack from the AMSAT store. And when you purchase through AMSAT, a portion of the proceeds goes towards keeping amateur radio in space. And the URL is amsat.org/product-category/hardware. Okay, looks like we've got at least one change here to the, two changes to the AMSAT North America TLE distribution. That's the two-line elements, or TLEs, often referred to as the Keplerian elements, or just KEPs in the amateur community. And they're the inputs to the STP-4 standard mathematical model of spacecraft orbits used by most amateur tracking programs. Weekly updates are completely absent from most amateur satellites. So if you run your tracking program and you've got your location in the right place, but you find that the birds aren't overhead when they're supposed to be, might be that you need to update your KEPS file. Let's see here. TLE bulletin files are updated daily in the first hour of the UTC day, and the bulletin files will be posted immediately after reliable elements become available for new amateur satellites. And you can find more information over at www.amsat.org/Keplerian-elements-resources. Okay, we've got an addition here that we don't usually see. It says, notice. In an effort to minimize confusion between sources of two-line element sets, AMSAT is adopting the convention of listing the USSF/NORAD satellite catalog name first, followed by any secondary name or names in parentheses. For example, this week, POEM-4, and then it says in parentheses, BGS-RPIT, was added where POEM-4 is the name that appears in the USSF satellite catalog, and BGS-RPIT is the name best known within the amateur satellite community. Expect name changes for affected satellites in the coming weeks as this change is being fully implemented. Okay, the following satellite has been added this week's ANSAT TLE distribution, and that is POEM 4, or BGS ARPIT, and it's NORAD Catalog ID 46495. And then the following satellites have been removed from this week's ANSAT TLE distribution. Okay, here we go. Bunch of them. We've got PRISM, or Hitomi, NORAD Catalog ID 33493, is likely defunct. Says Yubilini 2, or RS-40, NORAD Catalog ID 33735, is likely defunct. Tubisat 2, NORAD Catalog ID 41338, likely defunct. Tubisat 3, NORAD Catalog ID 41339, it says likely defunct. Okay, then we've got PRATHAM, NORAD Catalog ID 41783, you've got it, it's likely defunct. DSAT, NORAD Catalog ID 42794 is likely defunct. And then Range B, or NORAD Catalog ID 43772, likely defunct. And then we've got SISAT 1, NORAD Catalog ID 61501, decayed from orbit on or about the 9th of January 2025. And MRC-100, NORAD Catalog ID 56993, decayed from orbit on or about the 5th of January 2025. And we want to thank the ANSAT Orbital Elements page for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, in the Houston ANSAT Net. We got anybody else out there wanting to check in? If you do, somebody keyed up, go ahead and come now. Okay, well, that's all right. Let's see here. We do have another check-in here on EchoLink. That's Reed at W4UPB. Evening to Reed, and it looks like he's running Linux.
DL123.
And then also joining us, just connecting, we've got LU2UG. So good evening to him. Welcome to the Houston ANSAT Net, and welcome to finding us here on EchoLink. And we got you checked in, so welcome aboard. Okay, amateurs and others around the world may listen in on contacts between amateurs operating in schools and allowing students to interact with astronauts and cosmonauts aboard the International Space Station. The downlink frequency on which to listen in is on 145.800 megahertz worldwide. And we've got some upcoming contacts, Federal Telecommunications Institute, the IFT, and Vermont School, Mexico City, Mexico, have telebridge via IK1SLD. The ISS call sign is scheduled to be OR4ISS. Scheduled crew member is Nick Hay, KG5TMV. The ARS mentor is VE3TBD. The contact will be Friday, 1-17-2025 at 1718 UTC. OK, Okay, the crossband repeater continues to be active on the International Space Station. The uplink frequency on which you transmit is on 145.990 megahertz with a PL tone of 67. And then you listen on the downlink frequency of 437.800 megahertz. If any crew member is so inclined, all they have to do is pick up the mic. They can raise the volume up and they can talk on the crossband repeater. So give a listen. You just never know. You may end up talking to an astronaut. And the packet system is also active on the ISS. So if you're into packet, you can transmit your location and messages through the digipeater on the ISS. And that system is on 145.825 megahertz up and down. Okay, as always, if there's an EVA, a docking or an undocking, the ARRIS radios are turned off as part of the safety protocol. And all times they list are approximate. It's recommended you do your own orbital prediction or start listening about 10 minutes before the listed time. The latest information on the operation mode of the ISS can be found over at www.ARRIS.org/current-status-of-ISS-stations.html, and the latest list of frequencies in use can be found at www.ARRIS.org/contact-the-ISS.html. And we want to thank Charlie Safana, HA9N, one of the ARRIS operation team mentors, for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, in the Houston AmSat Net. Once again, if you'd like to call and check in, quick phone check in, the number 713-467-9870. APRS message to WV5Y, no dashes, no numbers. And then email, it's WV5Y@comcast.net. Okay, we've got some upcoming satellite operations. It looks like 8R Guyana is going to be becoming available. Well, it'll be a good one to work on satellite. Watch out for Aldir, PY1SAD, signing a call sign of 8R1TM from Georgetown between January 1st and February the 8th. It'll be QRV at 160-10 meters, CW, single sideband digital modes, and via satellites. You can QSL direct via home call, or Logbook of the World, or EQSL, or QRZ.com. All right, then we've got MA-057. HR Bahia Islands, we've got Alex K6VHF returns to Rotan Island and operates as K6VHF /HR9, and that's between the 5th and the 12th. QRV on 162.6 and via RS-44 satellite. You can QSL via K6VHF through Club Log, OQRS, Logbook of the World, or EQSL. A growing number of satellite rovers are currently engaged in sharing their grid square activations on hams.at. By visiting the website, you gain easy access to comprehensive information about the operators responsible for activating specific grid squares. Additionally, you have the ability to assess the match score between yourself and a particular rover for a given pass, while also being able to identify the upcoming satellite passes that are accessible from your location. And we want to thank Ian Parsons, K5ZM, and Sat Rover Page Manager for that information. AMSAT ambassador activities are firing up, and those AMSAT ambassadors are getting busy for this year. AMSAT ambassadors provide presentations, demonstrate communicating through amateur satellites, and they host information tables at club meetings, AmFests, conventions, maker fairs, and other events. AMSAT Ambassador Clint Bradford, K6LCS, says, "Think a 75-minute presentation on working the easy satellites would be appropriate for your club or event? Let me know by emailing at k6lcsclint@gmail.com or calling 909-999-7287. Clint has never given the exact same show twice. Each of the 150 presentations so far has been customized and tailored to his audiences. All right, we've got the Cowtown Hamfest coming up this weekend, it looks like. 2025 ARRL North Texas Section Convention. That's January 17th through the 18th. The Forest Hill Civic and Convention Center, 6901 Wichita Street, Forest Hill, Texas, in Fort Worth. And it's www.cowtownhamfest.com. And you should see some AMSAT activity there from N5HYP. Okay, K4RGK is going to be at the Gwinnett Amateur Radio Society Tech Fest, February the 1st, 2025. It's at the Gwinnett County Fairgrounds at the Expo Center Building, 2405 Sugarloaf Parkway in Larkin, 30045. And the URL for that is www.techfest.info. Okay, then we've got Hamcation 2025 by the ARRL. It will be the ARRL Southeastern Division Convention, and that's February 7th through February the 9th, 2025. And that's one of the bigger ones over there at the Central Florida Fairgrounds and Expo Park at 4603 West Colonial Drive in Orlando, Florida, 43808. And the URL is www.hamcation.com. And you should see KE4AL there putting on some stuff. So be sure and talk to him if you run into him.
CL123.
Alright, we've got Ambassador N1UW, which will be hosting some activities at the Yuma HamCon and Southwest Division Convention, February the 20th through the 22nd, 2025. That's at the Yuma County Fairgrounds at 2520 East 32nd Street in Yuma, Arizona, 85365. And that's www.yumahamfest.com. All right, we want to thank Bo Lowry, K4FCL, the director of AMSAT Ambassador Program, for that information. Hey, you want to fly the colors on your own grid expedition? You can get an AMSAT car flag and other neat stuff from their Zazzle store. And 25% of the purchase price of each product goes towards keeping amateur radio in space. And you can just run right over to www.zazzle.com/AMSAT_gear. All right. This is Marty, WV5Y, with the Houston AMSAT Net. So you want to remind everybody once again that our website's over at www.amsatnet.com. There, thanks to Bruce. And, of course, you can find Satellite Award information over there. So he is the director of the awards. He's got info over there on how to get awards for making satellite contacts. And then there's more over at AMSAT.org. You can also find the status of the satellites, the frequencies that they're operating on, and all kinds of good stuff like that, as well as information about the symposium. And there's even the AMSAT store, so if you need to update those satellite antennas, you can do that as well. Eutelsat's OneWeb Internet Constellation experienced a 48-hour starting on December 31st, 2024, due to a software glitch likely caused by failing to account for the leap year. The issue disrupted Internet services, but was resolved once the root cause, a ground segment software problem, was identified and addressed. Eutelsat operates over 630 satellites and has been building the OneWeb constellation since 2020 to provide global high-speed internet targeting business clients rather than direct customers. The company faced challenges in launching its satellites due to strained relations with Roscosmos following the Russian invasion of Ukraine, forcing it to rely on SpaceX and India for launches. Despite completing its constellation in 2023, regulatory delays in countries like India and Turkey have prevented global broadband coverage, leaving services available only in limited regions. Eutelsat is now planning to update its constellation with 100 new satellites by Airbus, aiming for improved reliability and full global service rollout by spring of 2025. And we want to thank Gizmodo for that information. Forest Space Coast set a record with 93 launches in 2024, surpassing the previous year's 74, thanks to innovations from Space Launch Delta 45 and private sector collaboration. Brigadier General Kristen Van Zinhagen credited advancements like automation, modernized infrastructure, and streamlined processes for the milestone. SpaceX dominated, of course, with 88 launches from Florida and completed 134 missions globally, including government, commercial, and test flights. The Space Force introduced initiatives like the One Falcon program to support SpaceX's rapid launch cadence, unifying personnel across ranges to enhance efficiency. Although only 4 launches directly supported national security, innovations in commercial space strengthened resilience and responsiveness for military missions, exemplified by the Rapid Response Trailblazer mission. With Blue Origin's New Glenn and ULA's Vulcan Centaur preparing for national security roles, competition is poised to grow, diversifying capabilities and bolstering launch options. And we want to say thanks to Space News for that information. Okay, SpaceX's next generation Starship, version 2, or Block 2, set to launch on its 7th test flight from Starbase, Texas, as early as Monday, January the 13th, 2025. I guess that didn't happen, at least I didn't hear about it, with the launch window opening at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 4 p.m. Central Standard Time, or 2200 UTC. This iteration, taller and more advanced than its predecessors, includes numerous upgrades, including smaller repositioned flaps for better heat protection, an enhanced propulsion system, and improved avionics for extended missions. For the first time, SpaceX will test Starship's payload deployment mechanism, releasing mock Starlink satellites on a suborbital trajectory and conducting reentry experiments to refine the vehicle's heat shield and reuse capabilities. The Super Heavy booster, equipped with additional protections and sensor enhancements, aims to achieve another tower catch, a feat last accomplished in October. The mission also marks progress toward full reusability, with one of the booster's engines recovered and reused from a previous flight. These advancements, combined with a focus on orbital refueling and vehicle endurance, lay the groundwork for Starship's future goals, including lunar landings under NASA's Artemis program and beyond. And I'll have to go over to SpaceX.com and see if that happened or is happening in the day or two. Okay, and we want to thank ARS Technica for that information. All right, in addition to regular membership, offers AMSAT offers membership to societies, which is a recognized group, club, or organization. Primary and secondary school students are eligible for membership at one-half the standard yearly rate. Post-secondary school students enrolled in at least half-time status shall be eligible for the student rate for a maximum of 6 post-secondary years in the status. Let's see, memberships are available for annual and lifetime terms. So just go on over to info@amsat.org there for additional information. Ehrensdorf, 80HJ, for this week's version of the Houston AMSAT of the news bulletins. And, of course, we're out of time, so hope everybody enjoyed this week's version of the Houston AMSAT Net. So stay safe. Be sure and play with those radios. Make lots of satellite contacts. Look forward to catching everybody next week. From Andy, W5ACM. Bruce, KK5VO, up there in Roman Forest, and myself, Marty, WV5Y in Northwest Houston, we say 7-3 for this week from the Houston AMSAT Net.
CL-123.
We got an update from Mitch. He says SpaceX Starship Flight 7 got moved to tomorrow at 4 p.m. Central Time. Thanks, Mitch.